This is the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network, brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting Adam to 21000.
All right, let's talk.
Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Adam Gold.
College basketball season starts
tonight. Oh, the festival of missed jump shots.
North Carolina will host Loyola of Maryland. I think it's Loyola of Maryland. NC State will host Bucknell. And Duke plays Kentucky in the Champions Classic. It's at Madison Square Garden. It is... I know when we talked to Chris Patoli yesterday, and I've talked about this before... It's somewhat bothersome that the college basketball season keeps creeping up earlier and earlier and earlier. I realize that I could sound like an old guy here, but I even think that people who are, you know, whose frame of reference only goes back 15, maybe 20 years in college basketball. So if you're like around 30 years old, we all remember a time where the season didn't start till around Thanksgiving. And that's not the case anymore. It just keeps going earlier and earlier and earlier. And maybe it's because we have more conference games. I don't know what the reason for it is. We don't really have that many more games to play. And the season's been capped at, you know, it's not just 27 games anymore. We have sort of hidden games in everybody's schedule because if you play in these tournaments, you get extra games to play. But for the most part, the season is longer without the games really having been added. It's not like college football where we went from, you know, 11 games to 12 games plus a conference championship. It's not like we've increased the season size by 15%. But the season begins earlier and it almost seems to end later. So that's always been an issue for me. You know, they talk about we don't want college football to be a two-semester sport. Well, why is college basketball a two-semester sport? That's been part of the argument to not extending the football season because, well, we don't want to go into the spring semester. You don't care. You do that with basketball. So why are we even having that conversation? So, anyway, it's just I would love for the sport to get away from football before it begins because we're starting basketball in the busiest time, the most important time of the college football season. Forget about the National Football League. It's the NFL, it's the last 4 weeks of the regular season of college football. And all of the leagues seem to have backloaded their schedules. So, I mean, games that are on the weekends get completely lost. This game won't get lost tonight. Duke Kentucky's not going to get lost tonight. In fact, do you know when ESPN will have their college basketball selection show tonight? In between games of the Champions Classic. I'm going to take advantage of the eyeballs on the Champions Classic and their college basketball, college football preview show. This is where they've done it in the past. I'm actually assuming here because why wouldn't you? So Kansas and Michigan State play first. Then in between the two games, because there's a half hour in between the two games, they'll do the college football, you know, fake selection show. And then they'll show Duke and Kentucky. It's a great night of sports if you are so inclined. Real quick about the Champions Classic. Kansas and Michigan State is the undercard. Then it's Kentucky and Duke. It's a top 10 matchup. 14th time since this event began that we've had a top 10 meeting. It's pretty good. Right? I think this event goes back to like 2011. So it's not like we've had 60 of these. We've had about 22 games and, you know, almost two-thirds have been top 10 meetings. It's pretty sick. We've had 1 year where it was 1, 2, 4, and 5. We've had a year where it was 1, 2, 4, and 7. I mean, you've got four of the bluest bloods in the sport's history. Remember, last year we had a different event. Duke didn't want to travel. They did not travel for any non-conference game. Michigan State came to Cameron. Kentucky and Kansas played in Indianapolis. But, you know, Duke got housed in their own building by Michigan State, really from the midpoint of the first half on. But this is going to be the last one for Coach K. I'm not sure you've heard. Have you heard this?
Well, it's the final one. It's not the last one. We're
You're
not
right.
allowed to say last.
You are 100% correct. Couple of quick notes about Duke and Kentucky. This is the first time they've ever met at Madison Square Garden in this event. This is the fourth time it's been at the Garden, but the first time that Duke and Kentucky have met. Duke is 2-1 against Kentucky in the Champions Classic. They are 2-1 at Madison Square Garden in the Champions Classic, and this has been renewed through 2025, so we're going to have more of this. In terms of eyeballs, these are the four of the five biggest draws. Actually, I'm going to say the four biggest draws in college basketball. Now, North Carolina is fifth probably on that list, but North Carolina is one of the absolute national TV attractions. There are no others. There are no others. If you go back historically over the last, we'll just say, 10 years in college basketball, you just look at television ratings. Every top 10 game, with very few exceptions, features one of these four schools. Every single one, with maybe two or three exceptions in the last 10 years. And that's just the reality. These are the draws. Duke, last year, forget about last year. Last year was too weird. 2 years ago, and I'm not saying because Duke was bad, television ratings were actually down across the board in sports during a pandemic. When nobody could go, somehow the ratings dropped. But go back to the last normal season, even though it shut down when we got to conference tournament time, of the top 10 college basketball games in terms of TV viewership, four of the top 10 featured Duke, three of the top 10 featured Kentucky, three of the top 10 featured Michigan State. I think Kansas only featured in one of them, but historically speaking, these are the four biggest draws in the sport, and I guess for obvious reasons, right? Anyway, and yes, it is Coach K's final year. Jay Billis was on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max this morning on how Coach and his players will deal with the senior season.
Well, he's thought about that. I mean, we actually talked about it. He's not going to spend as much time talking about, well, this is my last year, I'm doing this, you know, and the feeling of the players feeling like they have to win for him instead of win for themselves. It's his last year, but it's also the last year this particular team's going to play together. It's the only year this particular team's going to play together. So it's going to be about them. He can tamp down a little bit of it. He can't do anything about the stuff we say. You know, we're going to be, this is the last time Coach K puts his socks on in Madison Square Garden. You know, stuff like, we're going to do that stuff. And he's going to get gifts. My thing is, like, he should have a registry like a bride.
I agree with Jay.
Place setting? Would you get him a place setting? Cappuccino maker? Espresso maker?
Yeah, maybe a really nice coffee machine.
Yeah. I'm not even sure he drinks coffee, though.
He doesn't play golf. Jay actually mentioned that.
He did.
He was like, you can't give him a golf club because he doesn't play any golf. What does Coach K do?
He likes
for the fun?
Garden.
Okay, he gardens.
Likes the garden. I honestly would get him dog toys. He loves
blue.
His dogs.
He wants to walk
loves
blue.
His dogs, so I would do that. Man, you know what we can get him? Adam Gold Show dog biscuits.
There you go.
We got to find out when those are coming in.
Mm-hmm.
We got to find out.
Soon.
And I was told that the T-shirts, which have been on back order for some reason, I was told those should be in soon too. So we owe people T-shirts.
Yeah, we've got your T-shirts on layaway for whenever they come in.
All right. So we know how this is going to go, right? We know that people are going to be done with the Coach K farewell tour before it even starts. People are already done with the farewell tour. I can even hear how the Roy Williams didn't want any of the farewell tour stuff, and that makes him better than Kay. I'm tired of all of it. I'm not tired of the farewell tour. That's fine. I don't care. Either way, I'm not going to get caught up in, This is the last time Coach K's done this or that or anything else. That kind of stuff does not impact me one way or the other. I think Coach wants to coach this team. I think regardless of whether or not, you know, for selfish reasons or not, he wants to coach this particular team. And because he doesn't have to recruit, he is going to throw everything into this particular team. And maybe they'll be great. Jay Williams and Seth Greenberg, our friends, were talking about this also on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin.
Are you trying to get thrown out of the brotherhood again?
No. I'm giving us room for improvement. I'm not trying to start us off at the top. I want us to end.
Are you hedging your bets with Duke?
I do it all the time.
Are you hedging your bets? If Lalo, you came to the Garden, would people talk to you?
Of course, because I'm going to pick us to win it when it's all said and done. Is Duke in your top five?
Yeah, Duke's in my top five. Duke's the most talented team. Duke is old school Duke. Now, they got to defend a three last year. They gave up about 35% from the three, but you look at their talent. And you know, Jay, because you played on those teams. They have more pros. They have more lottery picks. They could have the player of the year on Paolo Carcero. Mark Williams, the last six game, averaged 17 points, 6 rebounds, and 1.7 blocks. I went and watched him practice. He gets every rebound. Remember this name, because he's the closest thing I've seen to you in a lot of ways, Trevor Keels. Mm. Trevor Keels is a physical, tough guard that can defend and make shots. Duke's got to be in the conversation for top five.
I haven't seen him play yet. I haven't
Paolo
seen Trevor.
Carcero.
I don't know who that is. I don't know who that guy is. But I haven't seen any of these guys play. I haven't seen any of the new guys play. Haven't seen Banchero play. Haven't seen Keels play. Haven't seen the transfers in. I haven't seen them go. I haven't seen A.J. Griffin, who's going to be a good player. But of the guys that they have back, Wendell Moore Jr. is a key piece for them. He has to be a good player. Joey Baker's got to knock down shots. Jeremy Roach has to be an effective defender and make open looks. And if some of these things happen and the freshmen can play well, I don't expect any of them to play well early. Maybe Banchero, because he is such an elite level talent. But when we get to middle January into February, if those guys, if the new guys are playing at a high level and some of those veteran players get it, yeah, why not? I mean, I certainly trust the guy on the bench. I mean, he'll get them ready if the ability is there. Now, the problem is you're asking for a lot of things to happen. You're asking for certain players who have not been consistent to become consistent. You're asking for freshmen to do it who haven't done it at this level. So there's a lot of moving pieces here, but I mean, the roster looks amazing. The biggest
Paolo Carcero.
It's not fair to Seth, man.
He said it. What happened there? He didn't even start with a B.
What did he say?
Paolo Carcero.
Carcero. Yeah.
Paolo Carcero.
Oh my gosh, that's too bad. So I think you know what the biggest known commodity is for Duke? It's Mark Williams. I mean, that dude, he's still listed at like in the top 60 for the upcoming draft. I think his offense would have to be atrocious for him not to be a first round pick. He's 7 feet with a 7'7 wingspan. He's a great athlete. He can block shots and pull down rebounds. How is that guy not listed in the top 30? I'll make that prediction. Unless his offense is atrocious, he's a first-round NBA draft pick. They've got a lot of talent on the team. So, I'm not entirely sure whether or not they'll compete for a national championship, but I know they picked Duke to win the ACC. Haven't looked at the schedule yet. The schedule will probably tell us more than anything else. Haven't looked to see what the breakdown is, who you play twice, who you play on the road only, all of that stuff. But I do know this, Alec. The first bracketology is out.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Jerry Palm?
No. I only looked at Joe Lenardi's.
Okay.
Joe Lenardi, and I apologize to Jerry Palm, who's our bracketologist.
I only look at Jerry Palm.
So Joe Lunardi has the ACC and the SEC, by the way, with eight teams in the field. So already the ACC is getting mad props from Joe Lunardi. They've had a great season so far.
Excellent.
Duke is a three seed. What? A three seed? What is Joe watching? Isn't Duke awesome? Seth Greenberg has him in the top five. How are they a three seed?
What does he have? Where's Gonzaga?
Oh, number one overall.
Oh, really?
Oh, okay. Yeah, of course.
Well, they're going to have to get past Dixie State tonight first.
Oh, Gonzaga?
Yeah.
Yeah. Gonzaga is the odds-on favorite to lose in the Final Four.
Do you know where? Yes, they are. Do not. I told you this earlier when they got the number one ranking this year.
Yeah.
There's your sign. There's your sign. Hey, do you know where? I'm serious, by the way. They play Dixie State tonight.
Excellent. Should be a heck of a game.
Can you guess where Dixie State is located?
Dixie State is located in Alabama.
Wrong. Utah.
Of course it is. That's exactly where I thought Dixie State would be. Oh, man. So, NC State did not make it. It's not even on the bubble. So, State, mad disrespect. UNC was a six seed. Florida State was a five seed. Who cares about the rest of this? All right, let's get to some NFL stuff, shall we? Can you win while losing in the NFL? Is that a possibility, Alec?
Yeah, it depends on how you look at it.
All right, so if you can, I think the Chicago Bears probably feel pretty good about even a loss last night. It's a game they could have won. I don't think they were the better team, but it was there for them. They had the lead late, and the Steelers drove down the field and kicked a field goal. They had some fortune. There was a fumbled punt return that was returned for a touchdown. Fumbled punt that was returned for a touchdown by Chicago. And they were really out of it in the first half, and Pittsburgh probably left the door open. But Justin Fields played great in the second half. Real quick comparison for me, I see Justin Fields and Josh Allen as very similar players. And I'm not talking about this version of Josh Allen. I'm talking about the year one, year two version of Josh Allen, who makes great plays and then makes you go, whoa, 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 what was that?
Mm-hmm.
Justin Fields did yesterday. But boy, when he gets it cranked up, he's got a big arm, yes. He's fast, yep. He's big, all of that. I saw the Bears on the sideline arguing for a late hit on Fields. Fields delivered the shot. You can't initiate the contact and expect to get a call. But he probably should have gotten some other calls that he didn't get last night. Interesting game. I thought the game was going to be a blowout in the first half because Chicago couldn't do anything, but Pittsburgh wasn't doing enough to take advantage of it, and that game was still obviously up in the air, and then you get the special teams touchdown, and suddenly it's a game. It was 23-20 at that point. But this is the way not just the NFL, all sports works, in that we have the stupid becomes the story. So the stupid last night is a taunting penalty on Bears linebacker Cassius Marsh. So it's, I think it was like third and whatever, and he sacks Ben Roethlisberger, and now it's going to be fourth and 15.
There's 3:40 left in the fourth quarter.
And it's 23-20. So the Bears could, with momentum, the Bears could be getting the ball back in, I don't know about field position, but getting the ball back with a chance to, whether a field goal ties it, touchdown puts him ahead.
I thought it was 26-20, but I could be wrong.
I think it was 23-20 at the time of the taunt because that extended the drive. And I believe Pittsburgh kicked a field goal at the end of that drive. I could be wrong. Either way, it extended the drive.
It's 3rd and 8, the Chicago 47, 26-20, 3:40 to go.
Okay, so Cassius Marsh, I was half asleep at the end of this game. So Marsh commits, has the sack, and then goes through his dance. And they throw a taunting penalty. You know what we're talking about with the taunting penalty, though? That Tony Corrente might have hip-checked Cassius Marsh on his way back to the bench. Look, I don't know. I don't see why Tony Corrente would do that. We're in a year where taunting penalties are all the rage. because the NFL decided that taunting needed to be curtailed. It's stupid. But this is where we are, so we get taunting penalties. And as taunting penalties go, it probably was one, especially this year. Here's Dominique Foxworth on ESPN, who says basically what I just did.
And I would have stood on the table to fight for Cassius Marsh if he turned to the sideline immediately after the play and looked at the Steelers sideline or even puffed his chest out or flexed. I would have defended him in that moment. But that's not what happened. He got up after the sack, did a jumping roundhouse kick. Then he turned his back to the Steelers sideline to celebrate with his teammates. And then he turned back around and started walking towards the Steelers sideline, kind of puffing his chest out a little bit, which, like, I want to be on your side, Cassius. However, like, you do all that, it's like 15 seconds after the sack. It's hard not to understand that a flag is being thrown.
Yeah. Can we get Cassius Marsh explaining what he was doing? Because I think what I want to say probably sounds better coming after Cassius Marsh talks about it.
I think it's pretty clear to everybody who saw it that I wasn't taunting. And, like, you know, I've been doing the celebration my whole career, and, you know, it's just sad to see stuff like that happen in a close game like that. It's just rough, man. I don't want to say too much because y'all know how it is.
All right, first of all, this is the first I've ever heard of Cassius Marsh, which might be on me and not on anything else. Alec, had you ever heard of Cassius Marsh before today?
I don't think so. No.
All right, so my whole career. So I didn't realize that the entire world knows about the Cassius Marsh sack celebration. This is not like Mark Gastineau back in the day when, you know, this Jet doofus would do this wild sack dance. Okay, so I've never heard of Cassius Marsh until last night. Who cares if you've been doing this sack dance your whole career? Seriously, who cares? Dominique Foxworth thought it was taunting. He wants to be on your side, and he thought it was taunting. So what are we doing? And how, I don't care about the time of the game. I don't. I've never cared about that. Is it worthy of a 2021 taunting penalty? Obviously.
This might sound old man, and if it does, that's fine with me because that's consistent with my personality. But all the celebrations are stupid. Like, I'm not going to be the one to, like, penalize people for them. Like, I don't really, you know, it doesn't matter at all necessarily. But I just think they're all dumb. Like, I understand they're entertainers and all that kind of stuff. And I'm not even trying to be the guy that's like, you know, you shouldn't do them, show a little class, like, be above it, act like you've been there before. That's not even really my stance. It's just, I just think they're stupid. Like, I don't understand. Like, why does it warrant a celebration? You know what I'm saying?
I don't know.
You know, like, I just don't really, like, if you score a touchdown, I feel like that's one thing. You've just put points on the board, and that's, like, a big deal. And I just, doing a roundhouse kick, like, I just think you're dumb for doing it.
Look, I don't care about celebrations.
Yeah, like, I don't lose any sleep over it, but
I don't think the NFL should be penalizing unless you are doing something so egregious that it becomes offensive. I don't think the NFL should care.
They shouldn't
about these taunting penalties.
They shouldn't, and they shouldn't care about, you know, my opinion either. That's just how I feel about it. Like, they don't do anything for me as a viewer or a watcher of the game or anything like that. Like, I don't think, wow, that was cool. He just did his roundhouse celebration. Like, it's not professional wrestling. I'm just like, I don't understand why. I mean, Steve Smith one time said, listen, man, I don't know if I'm ever going to catch the football again. So that's why I spin it every time or I do a little whatever.
I'm sorry. I'm not buying that.
And I'm like, okay, whatever.
I'm not, like, buying that.
I don't know. It's hard for me to explain. I just think just ultimately they're just stupid.
I don't disagree with that, the celebrations. But I also don't think that they're bad. And if the guys... I mean, if it helps them have fun, then I'm okay. It's entertainment.
Right.
I just don't... None of it bothers me.
Right.
Zero of it bothers me. I don't know why it bothers the NFL.
I don't even think it really bothers me necessarily. It's just kind of there. And it's like it just does nothing. You just tackled the guy.
Time and place matters.
You're a linebacker. You make tackles.
Right. This was my criticism. We have to take a break. This was my criticism long time ago about Cam Newton. They'd be down by 3 touchdowns in the fourth quarter. He'd score. He'd do his Superman thing. And I'm like, probably not. Look at the scoreboard.
Yeah. I
think that should dictate whether or not your celebration matters.
Again, I don't really care that he does it, but I thought it was stupid. Whatever.
All right, Alec, with Power Rank.
I'm ready. You want to go first this week? I think I went first last week.
Yeah, you can go first. You decide if we're going to do the best or the worst.
Let's do the worst. I think the best is more interesting than the worst.
Okay.
I don't really even have much to say about the worst teams. The Lions are number 32. God, it is a long time since we talked about how competitive they were in all their losses. Okay. They have failed to bite anyone's kneecaps so far this year. And they have mercifully had a bye week last week.
Yes.
And still have not won a football game.
Nope.
Are they going to win one this year?
Yes.
I think they will too. It is really difficult to lose 17 games.
It's hard. Very hard.
Number 31 is the Houston Texans. One of my favorite lines yesterday from John Breach's grades of all the games, which I read every week, was something along the lines of, we kind of figured Tyrod Taylor was going to be a little bit rusty coming off the injury, but we didn't think that his arm would be made out of rust.
Breach.
Texans, one win on the season.
Yep.
Their defense can be okay at times, but they got no offense.
Nothing.
The Dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
Two-win team. Had some bright spots, but their offense isn't good at all. They're terrible on offense.
God awful.
The Jets compete sometimes, and I like them, and they also have Mike White, who was a bona fide Hall of Famer already.
Top 5 quarterback.
Hopefully he's back this week after the injury to the wrist last week.
Yeah, we're going
to
rank quarterbacks later.
Listen, I had to move the Jags up to number 28 with the win over the Bills.
Mm-hmm.
Can't not give them a little bump this week. I mean, listen, it was a 9-6 game. Trevor Lawrence actually looked good in the first couple of drives he had. But ultimately winning a rock fight, which is probably how they need to win most of their games. But
yes.
Good win for them. Embarrassing for Buffalo. Buffalo should have walked back home after that. But the Jaguars get the 28th spot for me.
All right, here's my bottom five. Number 32, the Texans. Yes, they have a win and Detroit doesn't. But that win came over the Jaguars in week one. And since then, they have been far less competitive than the Lions have. Even though the Lions have been non-competitive several times. So has Houston. I've got the Texans at number 32. Detroit, even though winless, at number 31. I do remember that they were beaten by a world record field goal by the Baltimore Ravens, and also by, I think, the Vikings beat them in a last second field goal. So I have Detroit at number 31. Miami is number 30. They actually got worse after a win because
yes.
They turned it over 5 times against the Texans. So Miami, you are horrible. Horrible. Number 29, the San Francisco 49ers. So Arizona came into your place without Kyler Murray, without DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah.
And you got your teeth kicked in.
Yep.
Yeah, I just...
No A.J. Green, no J.J. Right. Watt, Colt McCoy at quarterback.
Get out of here. If Miami, Detroit, and the Texans weren't so bad, you'd be lower. All right, at number 28, the Green Bay Packers. They are obviously not immunized against terrible quarterback play. Jordan Love canceled their 7-game winning streak. He was very bad. He was very bad in the game. So Green Bay, number 28. All right, Alec, give
so
me
no,
your...
no Jaguars in there?
No. Green Bay's worse, and San Francisco's worse.
One of my other
favorites. Jaguars have won 2 of their
2
last
games.
3.
Yeah. They finally won in the United States this last week.
It's been since week one of last year.
That was awesome.
They won in the U.S.
Another one of my favorite lines over the weekend. First time the Jags have won in the U.S. They're a U.S.-based team. It's a U.S.-based league. They haven't won in the U.S. This was the first time since last year.
Since week one of last year.
It's been like 20-plus weeks.
Unbelievable. All right, who do you got up top?
All right, number one for me. They were off last week, but I've given the Buccaneers the number one spot.
Okay.
6-2, signature win against the Cowboys. They do have a loss to the Rams, and they lost to the Saints, but they're the best team in the league in terms of points per game. They've played mostly mediocre to bad competition.
Yeah, they have.
Defense is okay, but they got Tom Brady, so all is good. Number two, I've given the Cardinals. You mentioned they were without Kyler Murray, Nuke Hopkins, A.J. Green, J.J. Watt, Colt McCoy at quarterback. James Conner scored 3 touchdowns last week.
Conner's been great.
In pickup duty because the other dude got hurt.
Nah, Conner is great. Has played great
like,
for them.
The fact that they won with all those dudes out.
Yep.
It kind of proves to me that they got it's more than just flukiness. It's more than just quarterback making plays. I gotta believe they're gonna get Kyler Murray back.
Oh sure,
here soon. They're plus 122 in point differential so far this year. Their defense is top 3 in points allowed per game. Cardinals moving up quick. They were out of my top 5 for a long time. But now they're number 2. Number 3, the Rams. God. There's teams in here that I've pegged a certain way that I'm having difficulty moving around.
Mm-hmm.
The Rams are one of those teams because I want them to be good, but they got waxed last week by Tennessee. The offense sometimes can leave you wondering. They've lost to 2 good teams already. Man. Arizona and Tennessee have both beaten them. So that's kind of concerning. Their schedule has also been light, but I'll leave them at 3 for now. Number 4, the Cowboys. I can't unsee last week's drubbing.
Yes.
At the hands of the Denver Broncos, but I'm not going to let 1 week kind of change the way I feel about them. I think they're a complete team. Number 5, I have the Packers. Road wins at the Bengals. I don't even know if that's good anymore. And the Cardinals on Thursday Night Football.
Yeah.
They lost to the Chiefs. Is that a... Or they beat the Chiefs?
No, they lost to the Chiefs.
They lost to the Chiefs, yeah.
Yeah.
But they also...
That's a terrible loss. You can't lose to that team.
That's a bad loss at this point,
right?
It's
a terrible team, yeah.
Didn't they... Who'd they beat on Thursday? They beat the Cardinals on Thursday Night Football.
Cardinals on Thursday night.
I think Aaron Rodgers might still be the best quarterback in the league.
Probably
when
is.
When he's playing.
Yeah.
I want them to lose the rest of their games this year, but they're...
I actually think Joe Rogan is the best quarterback in the NFL.
Could be.
All right. I'll just go from the bottom, from the top down. I have Tampa Bay at number 1 as well. I think they're just laying waste to the competition. They're bored. Arizona, for all those, all the players who weren't playing, I have them at number 2 to go in there and win as comfortably as they did. That was really never a fight. I have the Baltimore Ravens at number 3. Big win over the Chiefs, which now seems like an FCS competition. Also beat the Chargers, and they have win at the Broncos earlier in the season. They have won, I think, 3 times in overtime, which is a little concerning that they have been dragged to overtime. But I just think they're really good, and I think Lamar Jackson is the MVP of the league.
And they won last week basically because the Vikings blew a huge lead.
Yeah, but that lead was almost all early. I mean, Baltimore was by miles the better team in the second half. The concern for me would be giving up the tying touchdown drive to Minnesota late. That would be the concern. They have had more trouble covering in the secondary than I thought they would. Number 4, the Tennessee Titans. They have the wins over the Bills, the Chiefs, and the Rams. I can't unsee the loss to the Jets.
Yeah, that's a weird loss for them. And by the way, they're in the playoffs.
Did they win the division already?
Basically. I mean, they've beaten the Colts twice, and the rest of their division is the Jaguars
Texans. Yeah, that division's over. It is – they didn't blow out the Rams as much as everybody thinks. They essentially got 2 defensive touchdowns. That was a tight game apart from that. They did not dominate that game by any stretch of the imagination. They were better than the Rams – they didn't make the mistakes the Rams made. But we'll see going forward what it means to not have Derrick Henry. And number 5, based on the best strength of schedule and strength of victory among those teams that are good, the Pittsburgh Steelers, who have now won four straight.
Interesting.
And I will tell you, Alec, that when the Bills lose to the Jaguars and the Green Bay Packers do what they did and Dallas is losing 30-0 at home to Denver, you're really scraping the bottom of the barrel trying to find a 15.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think I like my bottom three, and the Ravens and the Titans are two of the teams I can't bring myself based on preconceived notions.
Right.
Like I just don't believe in them very much.
Okay. I don't believe in the Steelers either.
But the Bills, the Ravens, and the Titans were 6, 7, 8, some way or form, however you want to rank.
Oh yeah, it's a deep top five. Gary Parrish will be there for CBSSports.com and the Eye on College Basketball podcast, which I listened to this morning on my drive in. Gary, how you doing?
I'm great, man. Thanks for having me. It's good to talk to you again.
Nice to talk to you, too. The podcast sounds great. I know you have a new producer I'm very excited for you guys and for him, since we know him very well. But this has become such an enormous event. By the way, it was just extended for another, I think, 4 years or 5 years through 2025. I'm glad that it starts the season. I've had my issues with starting the season when we do, but I'm glad it starts the season. But it is sort of like the Daytona 500 in that it's the biggest event of the regular season on the opening night.
Yeah, in some ways. But it sure beats the alternative, which was, if you remember, it was just a few years ago, college basketball season would actually start on Friday night. And you might have a good game or three, mm-hmm. but certainly not many. And it was just so counterproductive for the sport because you're starting in November in the shadow of football. Whatever happens, happens on a Friday night. By the time people wake up on Saturday, nobody cares because it's a college football Saturday. Then you've got the NFL on Sunday. Then you've got talk radio returning on Monday. And who's talking about basketball games that right. happened on Friday night after a full weekend of football? I mean, you might in your market, and I might in my home market of Memphis, but largely football is going to dominate those Monday conversations. And so it was so smart of them to decide to launch the season on a Tuesday each year, because no football on tonight and no football, you know, for a couple of days. So college basketball will be on center stage tonight. And obviously having this event with four blue blood programs, four Hall of Fame coaches, all of whom have won national championships, with at least five or six projected first round picks, you know, inside the garden, including the guy I believe is going to be the number one overall pick in the 2022 NBA draft, Paolo Banchero. I mean, it is hard to beat, you know, what we're going to be able to enjoy tonight as a season opening doubleheader.
Gary Parrish, CBSSports.com, also Eye on College Basketball podcast, as proof that I listened. I don't know if you know, Gary, but if this is Coach K's final season at Duke.
I've heard speculation that this is going to be his last go around. 42nd at Duke, 47th as a Division I head coach. I think I've got all the bullet points memorized at this point. And I know that this is going to wear on some people. Like, there has never been a time since Mike announced his upcoming retirement that I haven't written about it or talked about it. And somebody hasn't, you know, sent the throwing up emoji or the eye roll emoji. I personally don't understand the backlash, but I do know that it exists. And I guess I would just counter it by saying, I like this stuff. And, you know, and sort of what I compared it to in a column earlier today is, you know, we will now be able to appreciate every moment in real time for what it is, you know, well aware of, this is probably the last time K coaches in the garden, unless, of course, they end up in the Final Four NIT, and that would be a disaster. So let's hope that this is the final time he coaches in the garden, a place where he has coached more games than any other place other than Cameron Indoor and in Greensboro. Eventually, he will have his last game at the Dean Smith Center. He will have his final game at Cameron Indoor. And then he'll have his final game in the NCAA tournament, and we'll be well aware of what we're watching when we're watching it. The contrast with Roy Williams, I think, is interesting. I had no idea that was going to be Roy's last game in the Dean Smith Center. When he lost in the NCAA tournament, I had no idea that that would be the last time I'd ever see Roy Williams coach a game. Had I known, had we known, we would have all probably paid a little more attention to it, maybe appreciated it for what it was. You know, there are humans out there who saw the last Beatles concert, but they had no idea they were watching it when they were watching it. You know, for younger people, there's a group of people who, you know, were at the last Nirvana show, but they had no idea they were at the last Nirvana show. We get to appreciate what this is in real time with a clear understanding of what it means. And like I said, I acknowledge it's not for everybody, but speaking personally, I enjoy it.
Gary Parrish, CBSSports.com, also the Ion College Basketball Podcast, joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. Last year was a – I'm not saying it was a tough year for college basketball, because it was a tough year for sports in general. What are you anticipating? Maybe the sport got a little older. I know Kentucky's significantly older. And Duke, even though they're young, Duke's got a lot more veterans who should be able to contribute this year. Do you think college basketball will look better this year than it did a year ago?
Yes, and I mean look in the literal sense. It'll be visually more pleasing, and it'll be because of the fans. You know, college basketball cannot match the NBA, you know, player for player, skill set for skill set. You know, you can't match the shot making. You can't match the, you know, there's nothing about it. You know, if you watch an NBA game one night and a college basketball game the next, they look very different. And one looks like you are watching the most skilled and best, you know, players in the entire world. And another looks like you're watching something drastically less than that. As someone who loves college basketball, I have no problem admitting that. But what college basketball can do and does do that the NBA can't is provide the, you know, awesome college basketball atmospheres, like what you see inside Cameron or inside the Dean Smith Center, or, you know, when NC State's rocking and rolling, what that looks like, you know, the Kennel at Gonzaga, you know, the Allen Fieldhouse at Kansas. When you are watching a special college basketball game, particularly one on a campus, it just looks fun. It looks awesome. And it really impacted the sport last year, not having that. You can put up tarps and make it look clean, but the absence of fans is really, really noticeable when you're watching a college basketball game. And so, you know, yes, you know, first and foremost, it'll just look different when you're watching. But, you know, to your other point, you know, there are prominent programs that have, you know, fifth-year guys back because the NCAA granted them an extra year of eligibility. Villanova got two so-called super seniors back. And so, obviously, the number one team in the country is going to be is going to have a freshman at the forefront of its team, and that's Gonzaga and Chet Holmgren. And I think Paulo Bencaro at Duke has got a chance to be not only the freshman of the year but the national player of the year. But upperclassmen are going to play a prominent role in this season. And if you look at the top of the rankings right now, it's hard to miss that.
Gary Parrish is joining us here. Real quick about Duke before I ask you another kind of a bigger picture college basketball thing. As good as Bencaro is, or Trevor Keels or A.J. Griffin, I really think that Duke's ceiling is how good is Wendell Moore Jr.? How consistent can Joey Baker knock down a three? And what does year two of Mark Williams look like? I think that's where we turn, sort of like how Quinn Cook made the 2015 Duke team a national championship contender by hitting big shots. I think those guys will be what separates Duke from a Sweet 16 and a Final Four team.
Those guys matter. You know, they don't get all the attention in the preseason, but they matter a lot. You know, we've had two freshman-heavy teams win the national championship in the one-and-done era. First, 2012 Kentucky.
Yep.
And then 2015 Duke. And both of those teams are remembered for the freshmen. But what is important to remember is that three of the top six scorers on both of those teams were non-freshmen. At Duke, you had Quinn Cook playing a prominent role, and I don't think Duke wins that national championship without him. And then in 2012, yeah, Kentucky had Anthony Davis and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and Marcus Teague, but they also had Terrence Jones, mm-hmm. who was a sophomore. They also had Deron Lamb, yep. who was a sophomore, and Darius Miller, who was very important to that team, who was a senior. So what history tells us is that NBA talent matters, freshmen matter, but you got to have experienced pieces to put with them. And if you're a Duke fan wanting to be encouraged, you've got some of that. Now, Wendell Moore got off to an awful start last season, but everything I've been told is that, I mean, obviously I saw it with my own eyes, he got better as the season progressed, but then he had a really good offseason as well. If Duke is going to try to get to a 13th Final Four under K and win a sixth national title, Paulo will be the biggest reason, but he can't do this by himself. And he's going to need those non-freshmen to play a prominent role. And if they do, like I wrote this morning, I don't think it's crazy to think Mike Krzyzewski's final game could happen, you know, at the Superdome down in New Orleans, which would obviously be, speaking as a CBS Sports employee, a dream for CBS Sports.
No question about it. And again, the four schools we've got at the Champions Classic, and I'll throw North Carolina in this mix as well, are the five biggest draws on TV in college basketball. If you look at the top 10 rated games every year going back, Duke's got most of them, Kentucky, Michigan State, Kansas, and North Carolina all in the mix. All right, final question for Gary Parrish. Big picture, this is year one of name, image, and likeness. Can you look into a crystal ball and see this as maybe a reason for more players to stay in college as opposed to leaving?
Absolutely, because in recent years, we've had basically anybody who's projected to be, you know, a first or second round pick, they're gone. Guys who know they probably aren't going to be drafted are gone because, you know, maybe they just want to be out of school. But in lots of cases, they're like, okay, maybe I won't be in the NBA, but I'll be in the G League and then I'll work my way to the NBA. Or I can go to, you know, overseas somewhere, play in a foreign league and make a real paycheck. I'm just ready to do this for something other than a scholarship and cost of attendance stipend. Well, name, image, and likeness changes all of that. You know, Kofi Coburn at Illinois, and to answer your question more directly, not only do I think it will keep more players in college, I think it already did. You know, Kofi Coburn at Illinois might have got picked, might have not got picked. He could be making a paycheck right now playing professionally somewhere. He can make way more money being a star at Illinois in the Big Ten. He might come in a different world at some point. He just leaves school because he's done everything at the collegiate level he can do. But now it might be financially advantageous for him to stay in school 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because what is a first-team All-American playing in the Big Ten worth in this name, image, and likeness world? I can just tell you in my hometown, you know, Amani Bates and Jalen Duren, two five-star prospects, both enrolled at the University of Memphis. And I'm certain it is partly because they really like Penny Hardaway and were intrigued by Larry Brown and love the practice facility and so on and so forth. They also were very aware they can both be millionaires this year in this name, image, and likeness world by being basketball stars in a city like Memphis that is basketball crazed and has boosters and other businesses connected to the athletic department that are happy to throw that money around now legally. For decades, this was a problem for Memphis. It got them in trouble with the NCAA, mm-hmm.
yep.
having all these people willing to throw money around. Now it won't be a problem. And so, yes, I think, you know, if you're a projected, you know, second round pick now, and the best case scenario for you is making a couple of $100,000, best case in the NBA, and the worst is you don't know where you're going to be, it might be smart if you're an All-American level player to just stay in school and cash in on name, image, and likeness for as long as you can.
Yeah, look, I've said about certain programs, like this would have been great for the Marcus Pages of the world have absolutely rolled in money in Chapel Hill, local money in Chapel Hill. Now, he stayed all 4 years anyway, so it wasn't going to keep him there. He was that kind of guy. Same with Joel Berry. Those guys would have been huge marketing sensations, and they would have been able to tap into their value that they weren't allowed to at the time. So I think it's going to benefit those guys too. Gary Parrish, I appreciate your time, as always. Tell Matt we said hi. We will talk to both of you very soon.
My pleasure, brother. Take care.
You've been listening to the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast. Part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting Adam to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 3 p.m. Or you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.